touching on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history, going right to the front lines of history in the making. Well, there's a development in the prosecutions for the January 6th insurrection. Five members of the Proud Boys, including their former national chair, have been charged with the felony of seditious conspiracy. Now, there have been 800 arrests on that insurrection, and there are 250 of them charged with assaulting or interfering with police officers. But seditious conspiracy is a very, very serious crime. It can result in a prison term of 20 years. And if you have multiple charges, it can result in more than that. So let's unpack this a little bit. And, you know, occasionally I even get calls to this show from people on the Republican side or people who may not see that the January 6th insurrection was what it was, which was an attempt to stop the peaceful transfer of power through violence for the first time since 1860. With the election of Abraham Lincoln, second only to the Civil War, the most violent and disruptive act in attacking our democracy in the history of the United States. So let's unpack this. Let's get what it was. The January 6th insurrection wasn't just a bunch of guys who happened to get together, have a few beers and go, hey, I know, let's storm the Capitol. Let's show that we like Trump. It wasn't that. It was carefully planned. And it was carefully planned at high levels in the Republican Party. It was planned by Trump and by the people closest to him. And by proposing something called the Green Bay Sweep. Now, what is that? And we're not talking Vince Lombardi here, okay? But this was first of all, social media notice went out well in advance, come to Washington on January 6th. Something momentous will happen. If you want to take back your country, come on January 6th. Well, that got people's attention. So they all came. They reserved hotel rooms. Many of them brought weapons. Some of them left them in their cars. Some did not. And they got together for a rally, a Trump rally. And at that rally, you heard Donald Trump say, If you're not going to have a country, if you don't take it back, let's go up to the Capitol, march on the Capitol, I'm with you. Of course, he wasn't telling the truth. He wasn't with him. He went back to the safety of the White House, watched it on TV, and kept chuckling all afternoon as they beat police officers. But you also had Rudy Giuliani, Don Trump Jr., Mo Brooks, a lot of other people. But even prior to that, you had people like Jim Jordan. And by the way, I refer to him, as you know, as Gymnasium Jim, GYM Jordan. He's at the bottom of the list, as far as I'm concerned, among House members, although, you know, there's a lot of people at the bottom. Is he below Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Paul Gosar, Louie Gohmert, Mo Brooks, Matt Gaetz? I mean, I think they're all down there. They're all down there. But unlike the rest of them, guess what? If the Republicans take the House, he becomes chairman of the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee that's going to have a big say on elections and on selection of judges. The Judiciary Committee, Gymnasium Jim, GYM Jordan. He met in the White House right after Christmas with Trump and others and hasn't denied it. And they talked about how to do the Green Bay Sweep, how to overturn the election. And here is the plan. The plan was that Pence would get up. This is a ceremonial thing. in history, it was simply he stood there. He didn't have to be Pence. It didn't have to be anybody. And somebody brought in the certifications from 50 governors and secretaries of state, the majority of whom were Republicans. And they certified the election in their state in the Electoral College. And Biden beat him something like 360 to 232 in electoral votes, 7 million in popular votes. And the idea was that Pence would go, no, I'm not going to accept this. I think there was fraud. I rule without any basis in law that Trump and I stay on in power until this gets sorted out in a new election. And then he walks out of the room. And then everybody would have to go to court because Trump is in the White House. He could refuse to leave. He's the commander in chief, the military. This is what happens, by the way, in a coup in Africa, in Asia, in parts of South America. This does not happen in the United States. So the idea was that would happen. Well, Pence chickened out. Now, why don't I say, well, Pence was a hero. He stood tall. No, he didn't stand tall. He was thinking of doing it. And he called Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle is a former vice president under George H.W. Bush. Dan Quayle was not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but he had enough common sense to say, Pence, you're crazy. Don't do it. Don't go near there. So Pence chickened out and didn't do it. Then they launch the attack on the Capitol. And Trump says, well, if Pence does the right thing, good. But if he doesn't, oh, well. Oh, well, that's an invitation to violence. And they bring a gallows up there. They didn't build that gallows in 5 minutes. You don't build a gallows in 5 minutes. I don't care who you are. That gallows had already been built. And it's up there on the Capitol grounds. And these guys go up there. Well, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and some of the others who had military background in the National Guard, there are military formations in the Army and in the Marine Corps. And you can tell as they walk through the crowd, they walk single file with discipline. These people had had military training and they knew what they were doing and they had discussed this in advance. It looks like a big crowd of people shouting and waving their arms. Take a good look. There are military formations walking through that crowd. Well, the Proud Boys were very much at the leadership in planning this thing. Now, I have faulted Merrick Garland for not being aggressive enough. But I will acknowledge that there have been 800 arrests, 250 people criminally charged with assaulting or interfering with police officers, and now five Proud Boys charged with seditious conspiracy, and the head of the Oath Keepers had been charged with seditious conspiracy. What is that? What is sedition? Well, there was a sedition act going back to the founding of our country, but you have to be a little careful. Because at the beginning, they charged a guy who was a newspaper editor who said something about the government they didn't like. And I'm not kidding. This is under George Washington. And they said it was sedition. Well, the idea of criticizing the government as sedition is something that happens in Putin's Russia, in Kim Jong-un's North Korea, in Xi's China, parts of Africa, parts of Asia. That's not what democracy is all about. And one of the most important decisions in our judicial history was that the courts threw that out and said, no, criticizing the government is not sedition. But he criticized it in his newspaper in an article. But sedition can be a felony if it involves violence to overthrow the government. And that's what this was. This was violence to go up there and murder Mike Pence. Remember, hang Mike Pence? They kept saying, hang Mike Pence, and they had a gallows there. And oh, Nancy, where's Nancy Pelosi? They would have kicked her to death. She's a woman in her 80s. You know, she looks like she's probably 102 pounds or something. She would have died. When you send a crowd and are part of organizing a crowd to stop the certification of the electoral votes and rule, well, let's take a good look at this, have another election, go through the court system. Courts take months and maybe years to resolve cases. And Trump would stay on in February, March, April, May. And finally, there's some courts would have gone, well, he's already been in for another couple of years. Why not let him, you know, Republican courts? That's what was going on. So Merrick Garland, I think, stood tall in this one, charging the Proud Boys and charging their national leader, charging their national leader. Now, but when is he going to charge Donald Trump? When is he going to charge Rudy Giuliani, Don Trump Jr., Mo Brooks? When is he going to charge the people who lathered up the crowd? When is he going to charge them? Now, the implication I'm drawing from this, the hesitancy to charge Donald Trump is that normally in a democracy, the outgoing president doesn't get criminally charged by the incoming president and thrown in jail. That's what happens in autocracies. But in this case, what if the outgoing president committed felonies, which he did, and a number of felonies? He's right now in front of a grand jury, Donald Trump is, in Atlanta, Georgia, for extortion against Brad Raffensperger. I think that under these circumstances, charges should be brought. A grand jury should be convened. If they come back with an indictment, Donald Trump should be charged. He should be brought into court. You don't have to handcuff him. You should bring him in. He can put in an appearance, no bail or bond, and see what happens in front of a jury. This is America. No man is above the law. No one is above the law. But good news, five members of the Proud Boys have now been charged with seditious conspiracy, including their former head, and I believe they'll be convicted. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, how bad is this? Vladimir Putin, it's been discovered, has stolen, not just bombs and so forth, but when he takes over an area, he steals the grain that Ukraine has stored and sells it at inflated prices. He has stolen more than $100 million in grain, $100 million in grain. Let me tell you something. This guy, Putin, we have about $350 million of his on reserve that he put, you know, badly for him in our banks. I would say take all of the Russian assets that we have control of. You know, we seize these yachts from oligarchs. We seize their apartments. They launder money, which they stole from the Russian government, and they'll buy an apartment in New York. I'm about to tell you a price that you're not going to believe, so Google it. There is a building just on the corner of Central Park South, not too far from the New York Athletic Club. It's roughly 59th Street and, I don't know, 7th Avenue, 8th Avenue, maybe Broadway. It's a beautiful building. The penthouse, guess how much guy paid for it? For an apartment. Now, how much do you pay for rent for an apartment? Right? Okay. There's a condo. $250 million. How do you like that? Hey, seriously, how do you like that? Now, this guy was not an oligarch. He was an American, but the oligarchs steal money and then they'll go, there's plenty of $50 million apartments around there. I'm not kidding. In Manhattan, right around Central Park. 50 million, 100 million, 25 million. They buy these things for cash, and realtors are happy to take it because they get 6%, right? What do you think 6% of 250 million is? It's $15 million. Is that a bad realty fee for a couple of hours work? This is what's going on, guys. It's going on. So they launder this money and then they sell the apartment. They'll take a loss, but then they think legitimate cash, quote unquote, because it was selling an apartment in New York. And they do this in London, and they do this down in Florida and elsewhere. And then they have yachts, which they then sell and so forth. Now, I would seize all these. The government can seize them, and then I'd sell them. And a buyer will go, well, yeah, I'd like to buy it, but how do I know I have clear title? Okay, and here is the deal. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, who in general I think is doing a good job, I think is off base on this one. She is unsure whether we should do this. She thinks maybe we shouldn't do it. What do you mean maybe we shouldn't do it? They stole 100 million in grain from Ukraine, and then they bombed the fields so they can't grow much more. How much? It's going to cost billions, hundreds of billions, to rebuild Ukraine. Take a look at the buildings they've damaged in all these cities, people they've killed. They should pay for it. We have their money. Let's pay for it. Now, let me give you the legal basis for it. And in case Janet Yellen, I know she's not a lawyer, maybe she should read some law. Normally, if you seize assets, you have to go into court if you're the government and say that there's a basis for doing it. You know, if it's eminent domain, let's say it's a building, we're going to build a highway or something, and so we need it, and we'll pay fair market value, and you can't just take it under the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment, which has been incorporated through the 14th Amendment to the states. Can't just seize property, including foreigners' property. But what about this? What about if the property was stolen? Well, here it was stolen. Should we have to go into court and have the burden of showing all this, or should we just take it? And they have access to our courts. They can sue the government for doing it, raise the Fifth Amendment, raise the 14th Amendment, raise anything they want, due process. And we say, fine, we're going to take your deposition. These people are felons. They're criminals. They're genocidal sadists. They're not going to come here. They're not going to do it. And if they do it, the minute they give a deposition, we'll have a basis for arresting them, charging them with felonies, and putting them in prison. These are criminals. They're a mafia. The Russian savages are mafia members. I'm not talking about every Russian citizen. I'm talking about their leadership and their autocrats. We're going around the world, what, grabbing their yachts? Why don't we go around the world with a sniper rifle against them? These people are genocidal sadists siding with Putin. And the few that aren't were murdered. One guy in Barcelona and his wife and his wife and his kids, and another guy in Russia and his wife and his kids stabbed to death, shot, and then Russia said it was a murder-suicide. How many guys do you know stabbed themselves to death? How many guys do you know stabbed themselves to death? Give me a break. These were autocrats who dared to say Putin is mistaken and wrong and going into Ukraine is what happened. Now, this is the grain. Now, how has that had a consequence now? And I'll give you an example at the UN. The UN ambassador, who is at a Security Council meeting from Russia, the Rusky, is Vasily Nebenya, and he's a bad, bad man. He looks like a villain in a James Bond movie. He looks like Ernst Stavro Blofeld. Take a good look, nasty looking thing. Rusky ambassador to the to the United Nations. The head of the EU at the United Nations is Charles Michel, M-I-C-H-E-L. He got up at a UN Security Council meeting just yesterday, and he said that Russia's attack on Ukraine has stopped food preparation and growth and export from Ukraine. Ukraine exports 10% of the world's wheat. It feeds Africa, basically, is where it goes. Sunflower oil, barley, foodstuffs, the third world countries depend on. Some people in this country live paycheck to paycheck. Some people in Africa live meal to meal. Meal to meal. And here's his statement, a magnificent statement from Charles Michel, head of the EU Security Council in the UN, to Vasily Nebenya. He said, Vasily, quote, Russia is solely responsible for this looming food crisis. Russia alone. And you know what Ernst Stavro Blofeld, he looks like Ernst Stavro Blofeld, Vasily Nebenya did. He got up on his hind legs and stalked out. Kind of reminded me of Groucho Marx's line. I resemble that remark. This guy is sick. He's a sick puppy. They are willing, the Ruskies, in addition to stealing what grain they have, they're essentially thieves. It's a culture of theft. It has been for 1,000 years under the czars and under everybody else. Culture of theft. But in addition to stealing grain from Ukraine, they're bombing the fields so they can't plant more. They have a blockade against the Ukrainian ports that ship this grain out. And Africa, famine in Africa will spread this summer and fall as a result. And Sergei Lavrov, the genocidal sadist who is their secretary of state, so to speak, he's their foreign minister is what they call it. Sergei Lavrov, the animal, the dog, said, well, we will lift that if basically Ukraine surrenders and you lift your sanctions. You are dealing basically with Hitler with nuclear weapons, the mafia with nuclear weapons, ISIS with nuclear weapons, a drug cartel with nuclear weapons. Something's got to be done. So we don't have nuclear war, but they are beaten down forever. Obviously, the genocidal sadist Putin has got to go. Here's my solution. It's not only mine. Admiral Stavridis, the head of NATO at one time, one of the best admirals I've ever seen, said we should send our U.S. Navy into the Black Sea. It's international waters, and escort grain ships. And you can flag them out of Egypt and Turkey and pick up the grain and take it and sell it. They're not going to attack our Navy. I think that's exactly right. That's what we should do to stop starvation. Going to break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. Well, there is a story and an event that will make the hair on a monkey's back stand straight on end. Ever seen some of these videos, you know, a bunch of monkeys smell a leopard or something, and suddenly they start chattering and their hair sticks up. But that's basically what this is. There's an article in the New York Times, but it well encapsulized what is happening around the country. And that is this. I've told you in a previous segment that there are election deniers about 2020, you know, people say like a Gableman, or people say like a Mike Lindell, my pillow guy, people like that, who are basically big steel types. You know, they say there was fraud, Trump won the election, we got to stop Trump not winning a future election. It's basically just autocratic sentiments, ignoring elections, and using any means possible to overturn them. And we've talked before about how election deniers, 2020 election deniers, are running at all levels of government and races around the country to supervise elections, and in some cases count the votes. And you remember Stalin's dictum, Stalin the murderer, the 20 million people, the Russian communist who murdered basically everybody he get his hands on, especially anybody who opposed him, once said, it doesn't matter who the people vote for. What matters is who counts the votes. And there are people, these election deniers, running to count the votes. Well, here's some more specific information. The Secretary of State position in most states has a great deal of control over the elections. We saw that in Georgia. You know, Brad Raffensperger is now the Secretary of State. But when Trump called him and threatened him and said, come up with another 11,500 some odd votes, if he had said, okay, then Trump would have, quote, won in, quote, Georgia. It would have been obvious fraud. There would have been court cases. But if that had happened in the six swing states, Trump would have stayed in office while the courts figured it out. And he, in effect, would have conducted a coup to stay in office. Fortunately, Raffensperger stood tall. And there are a few people, one in Michigan and one in Pennsylvania, who are on commissions, who are Republicans, who nevertheless insisted on opposing the big steel ideology and counting the votes squarely and showing that, you know, Biden won Michigan by more than 100,000 votes. He won Pennsylvania by almost 100,000 votes. Well, there are people running for Secretary of State, more than 12 of them, more than a dozen of them. They're running for Secretary of State. And if they get elected, and these are all Republicans and all people who say that they would not have certified Biden in 2020 and they won't certify a Democrat in 2024, no matter what. In some cases, they've won their party's nomination, their endorsement for nomination. In some, they're very competitive. Let me give you some examples. In Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, there are Republican candidates who are either won their party endorsement or are very competitive, who very easily could beat the Democrat in November and count the votes, like Stalin. It only matters who counts the votes. It is because there is a nationwide movement and organization called America First, and these are on the America First slates. America First, you've heard about America First. You've heard about it during the 1930s when it opposed getting involved in the Second World War. Then Trump revived it. America First, America First. And how can you argue with America First in general? I'm a patriot. I'm a Navy vet. I believe in America First, but I believe in democracy. And I don't believe in fascism, and I don't believe in overturning elections through the use of force or fraud. But there's an America First slate, believe it or not, for secretaries of state. And they have more than a dozen candidates from the America First slate. By the way, America First slate, the organizers have QAnon links. Essentially, this is a QAnon-influenced slate, America First, and more than a dozen of their candidates have either already gotten the Republican endorsement or are competitive. And they easily could beat a Democrat in some of these states. And if they do, they will count the votes. QAnon will count the votes. What do you think is going to happen? There's a QAnon guy. Remember Cyber Ninja in Arizona? It was a QAnon guy that put that together. What happened, do you think, if Mike Lindell had counted the votes? What do you think would have happened if Trump had counted the votes? Right now, their candidates from the slate are very possibly going to win in Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, three of the six states that resulted in the Electoral College going to Joe Biden. He won Michigan by over 100,000 votes, Nevada and Arizona by less than that, and he won it fair and square. But if you have a Secretary of State who says, no, I think there's fraud, I'm going to send a certification for the Republican, which is what these people have promised in their campaigns. That's going to take the courts to overturn it. And the courts, increasingly because of Trump's, I'm talking about federal courts, because of Trump's appointments, are more and more Republican. And they've shown what they'll do to benefit the Republican Party. Now, what about Pennsylvania? Pennsylvania, the Republicans in a primary just nominated a guy named Doug Mastriano, who's a state senator. And he came right out with a QAnon position. He just said, Trump won, and I will not let that happen again. And remember, the governor signs off on the certification as well as the Secretary of State. But it's even worse because, believe it or not, in Pennsylvania, the governor appoints the Secretary of State. You don't get to vote for the Secretary of State. That is why the Republicans in Wisconsin are going to put a referendum on the ballot that can't be vetoed by Evers because referenda can't be vetoed. And it's going to say the Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor, Treasurer, and the Superintendent of Public Instruction will all be appointed by the governor. This sort of QAnon-type control is going to extend into our own state if that referendum passes. You cannot let that happen. I don't care if you're a Republican or you're independent listening to this show. Do not give up your right to vote. Never give up your right to vote, no matter who says it, no matter what seemingly plausible arguments they make. Now, Doug Mastriano is mouthing the QAnon position, and he gets to a point. In this state, and whoever he appoints doesn't even have to be a Pennsylvania citizen. They could, well, he could appoint Mike Lindell to my pillow guy. And Mike Lindell could rent an apartment in Pittsburgh, show up only at election time, appoint staff, and count the vote. He could have, Voss could appoint Gableman and pay him. Well, what the heck? He pays him anyway. And my tax dollars, and your tax dollars, and he already blew the budget up to 900 grand. He could do the same thing here in this state if that ever passed. This is very sick, and this is very, very wrong. In Georgia, Raffensperger is running again. He's a Republican, but he stood tall against Trump. We have a very good candidate against him, but she has nowhere near the name recognition of Raffensperger. But in Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, in Michigan, we have a good Republican, good Democratic incumbent Secretary of State. She's terrific. She should beat the denier running against her. But can I guarantee that in the year when Biden's in the White House and there's a lot of tough issues that he's doing a good job fighting? I can't guarantee that. Michigan's an important state. So is Arizona and Nevada. What if election deniers, the Republicans, win in all those states? It's a certainty that Doug Mastriano won the nomination for the Republicans in Pennsylvania, and the governor appoints the Secretary of State. That is a certainty. That is a certainty. But we have a very, very good Democratic candidate for governor, the Attorney General in that state. Very, very good candidate. Can he beat Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania in a year with we're the incumbent party in the White House? Statistically, there's a headwind, but are there enough Republicans and independents and moderates in Pennsylvania who will look and go, well, yeah, you know, I might like a little bit of a change of party, but I'm not going to put in a QAnon guy. I'm not going to vote for QAnon. I don't know. The jury's out, but beware. In this state, in Wisconsin, fortunately, we have Doug LaFollette. Now, Doug is opposed in the primary, and I respect that. But Doug has been Secretary of State for a long time. I know him very well. I'm a friend. I like him. I think he's done a good job. They stripped him of all his duties, so how can I say he's done a good job? Because he stands there, and they can't beat him. They can't beat him. And whoever comes out of that primary has got to beat the Republican, because she has said that there was something wrong with the election, and she is a denier in Wisconsin. My feeling is that Doug LaFollette, and I'm going to vote for Doug LaFollette, deserves another term, and he will stand tall against this sort of business. In fact, he is absolutely above attack by the Republicans. They're all junior varsity amateurs compared to Doug LaFollette. And he will stand tall. Now, obviously, if Tony Evers and Josh Call get reelected, which I hope they do, then we have a good set of linebackers here. But we're playing defense largely because of the gerrymandered legislature. All of this is intended to do two things. Put you on notice about the QAnon influence in the counting of the vote. And this doesn't even get to things like elected election commissioners. Who's going to be on the Wisconsin Election Commission? Will it be abolished by the Republicans? That kind of thing. It doesn't even get to that. But the core goalie, the core linebacker, is the Secretary of State. And more than 12 of them now have, on the Republican side, QAnon leanings in ideology on voting and counting. Going to break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. Today is primary day. Today is primary day. Not in Wisconsin, don't worry. Our primary day is August 9. But today is primary day in seven states. I'm going to talk about two of them, not all seven. We don't have all day. Pay attention. One of the things that you might enjoy doing tonight is turn on TV and watch some of these returns come in, because they're very important. And in a lot of them, there are various contests for congressional seats. They're going to determine two things: the direction of Congress after January, but also whether the Democrat can beat the Republican, because some there are stronger candidates than others, and it's not certain. The issue is in doubt. It's not certain. The two that I want to quickly talk about are California and Iowa. California has a whole series of primary elections. It's a big state, biggest state in the country by population. The major race that's being focused on is mayor of Los Angeles. Why is that? Because Los Angeles is the second largest city in the country. It's a major, major position. Karen Bass, who's a congresswoman from L.A., very fine person, former head of the African-American caucus, Black caucus in Congress, is running. And there's a fellow running against her who is a developer, real estate developer, a billionaire, who filed as a Democrat. He basically contributed to both Democrats and Republicans. The one thing I will say about him, he developed shopping malls, and apparently he's skillful in what he does, and he has a lot of properties in California and elsewhere. And the question in that primary is basically going to be, because what it is it's the Democratic primary, and there are something like five or six candidates. The top two go to a runoff, and it's certain to be Karen Bass and this real estate developer. She's, I think, at 38% in the polls. He's at 36%, and everybody else is in single digits or low teens. So it's pretty clear that they are going to survive and then run against each other, and it's going to be a classic general election, or runoff, I should say, runoff for that nomination between these two people. And are people going to go more towards ideology, or are they going to go more towards confidence in running a large organization? And the danger with going with confidence in running a large organization is you can get hoodwinked. Donald Trump claimed that you should do that, and we got Donald Trump. Sam is wiggling her thumb. Sam, do we have a text?
I have a text from Dan from Madison, and he asks, do you think multi-member districts for state positions would help reduce gerrymandering? Would it ever be constitutional?
You know, that's very, very good. And let's suppose you had a multi-candidate or actually multi-representative districts. So let's give you an example. A state Senate district in this state right now has roughly, and I'm being real rough, 180,000 people. An assembly district has 60,000. That was based on the population a few years ago. It may be a little more now, but basically that's what you have. So there's something like 3.5 Senate districts for each congressional district. Let's say you made a state Senate district the size of a congressional district. So let's say 3.5 of them. And then you had 3 or 4 state senators elected from that district. That's what you do in school boards right now, certainly in the Milwaukee area, certainly in the and for village trustee and that and so forth. Some of the suburbs of Milwaukee do that. So there'll be 5 trustees or 4 school board members, and you'll have 8 people running. Or there'll be 2 or 3 school board members and trustees, and you'll have 6 people running, and the top 3 vote getters get it. That's worked out very, very well. And maybe you do that elsewhere in the state, I'm not sure. But in the Milwaukee suburban area, that's pretty common. Now, that has worked out very well, because what happens is, and these are essentially nonpartisan positions. These are essentially positions where you run, if you're a trustee or you're a school board member, people kind of know what your politics are if they're following the news. But basically, you're not appearing on the ballot as a Democrat or Republican. If you transferred that concept to partisan office, so let's say you had a state senate district the size of a congressional district, and you're going to have 3.5, so let's call it 4 state senators elected, and you have 8 candidates, the top 4 would get it. You know, no runoffs, top 4 get it. If there was a jumble of Democrats and Republicans, would it be solely partisan, or would be people be looking for competence? The reason I like it, I like the idea as somebody, and I'm a Democrat. I mean, I was the chairman of the party. I'm a Democrat. However, one of the reasons I like it, it would make gerrymandering very difficult. Because if you set up districts that are the size of congressional districts, they've managed to gerrymander congressional districts in this state. Right now, there are 5 Republicans and 3 Democrats. And with the new lines, it's possible that the first congressional district could go Democratic, but it's also possible that the 3rd congressional district could be attacked by Republicans. So I would say, as an interesting idea, I'd give it a try, but there's something I'd like a lot better. What I would like a lot better is no gerrymandering and keeping districts the size they are. In other words, a fair maps commission. This is what Iowa did. This is what other states have done. Some did it, like Ohio, and then the Republicans, when they got in power, disregarded it. In New York, it passed. The Democrats disregarded it, but there a judge overturned what the Democrats did, and the Democrats accepted the judicial determination, even though they didn't like it. In Ohio, the Republicans blew off the judicial determination. Okay, that's the difference between our parties. However, why do I like the smaller districts where you know who your representative is, if they're fair maps. If they're fair maps, right now, the Democrats get slightly more votes than the Republicans. We get about 53% of the legislative votes statewide. We get 37%, a little over a third. We get over half the votes and barely over a third of the assembly seats. That isn't democracy. That's fraud. That's gerrymander fraud. That's what the Republicans are doing. So what to do about that? If you have fair maps, there's 2 great benefits that would come from fair maps. One is each district would be about 50-50. It'd be, you know, 48 Republican, 52 Democrat, or 52 Republican, 48 Democrat. A good candidate could overcome that margin, and you get talent in the legislature. But a good candidate can't overcome a 5 or 10 point mark. It's as simple as that. The other thing it would do is take a look at our legislature. It's really pathetic. In the Republican Party, you have all people who are terrified of Donald Trump because they don't want to lose in a primary. Everybody is running for his primary in all these safe seats. And most of them are Republicans, but some are Democrats. So in the Republican seats, you get people running on essentially QAnon themes. Stop the steal themes, Trump themes, attack democracy themes. In the Democratic primary, on a different set of issues, it's the same. It is an identity politics cult. You are running on identity issues. And it's very, very distasteful. And if we had fair maps, I think half or more of that legislature in both parties would be out of office. You can't possibly have people that are that subservient to their kinds of ideologies winning in competitive districts. So that's my preference, although I like the idea of experimenting with multi-candidate districts as we do in the suburbs in Milwaukee for nonpartisan seats. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.